Well, welcome to episode whatever of the Storm Chamber. I am Toon Bear. I play Signar, and that's the only faction I own. I sold the last of my pigs. With me today is Trevor.
I'm Trevor, and I play Signar, and I'm locked and loaded to talk about some lock and load.
Okay. Corey.
I am Corey. I also play Signar. Oh, and I am also excited to discuss lock and load.
Good. So this is the first time, Trevor, that you came out to the West Coast for lock and load, despite playing War Machine for years and years and years, right?
Indeed.
And Corey, was this your first lock and load experience?
No, I have actually been to all of the lock and loads.
Okay. This was my third lock and load trip. I live in Oregon, which is about 4 hours south of Seattle. But with the traffic I hit, it actually took me 6 hours to get there. I was pretty lucky to share a room with Pat Dunford and Luke Johnson, both swell guys, both play Signar. How about you, Corey? Where did you stay?
We stayed about a block away at the Marriott. And I stayed with a couple of locals from town here. We're only about 5 hours driving down.
Gotcha. And Trevor?
So we also drove down.
Nah. Trevor, where did you stay, man?
I don't know, a hotel.
Sure.
I'm not sure people are particularly interested
in I'm just trying to shoot the breeze. You know, it's like these podcasts, it's like you're wading into a cold pool. You know, you're trying to like... Okay, fuck it. All right. So in years past, when they have done the big like reveals and everything, it's always been Saturday night. And this year they did Friday morning. I felt like that was a lot better. And in the previous years, the keynote has been relatively short. Like last year they had the Grimkin trailer, which was just poetry and strange images. It did not reveal a lot. But this year, they revealed a lot, like a whole shit ton of a lot. Did they not, Corey?
Yes, it was. I want to say it was about 45 minutes was the keynote. And it was pretty neat. This was definitely the first one done not on a Saturday or Sunday. And it was probably a really good call for them.
Yeah, I've never liked that they just open the doors on Friday and they're like, all right, let's play games. And you're like, you're not really psyched or amped for the weekend. And this weekend, I felt like I was pretty amped because the keynote revealed quite a bit. Trevor, were you happy with what was revealed in the keynote?
It was fine. There's a lot of stuff, but they don't have a TempleCon or anything to do. So it's kind of cool that their convention has all the announcements.
Sure.
It was long enough that it delayed the start of all the tournaments, though. So that was fun, being like an hour and a half late.
Oh, that sucked. They said Masters was going to start at like 10, and they didn't start Masters till like 20 after 12.
Yeah, it was awful.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. But the keynote itself, I thought, was interesting. A couple key takeaways. If you missed the keynote, they revealed a new faction called the Crucible Guard, which looks like it's going to have Rocket Men. They revealed a Arcane Tempest Gunmage Scatter Gunner, which I thought was cool. They revealed
Bastion Falk, I think is his name.
Yeah, yeah. They revealed.
Did you guys catch any of the spoilers for him that they gave out over the weekend?
A little bit. One of them was like, if he hits somebody from a spray, you can start another spray from. The disabled
model?
Yeah,
one of his rune shots takes the spray off his gun, but if he hits with it, he sprays from the target.
Yeah, that's
so
that's
super
neat.
It's essentially crevasse is how they explained it.
Yeah, that seems
but you don't have to
really
kill
powerful.
The other big one that they talked about was that the model hit, I don't know if it was a solid shot or a spray, but the model hit suffers an additional 2 damage from magic damage rolls. So that includes spells and stuff like Kane 1's battle group has all magic damage on their ranged attacks. So that's a pretty big deal.
Oh, really? I missed that. That's pretty hot. the keynote was like really long. They went over some painting stuff. They went over No Quarter Prime. One of the things that I thought was cool, if you dig just miniatures, was the Mini Crate thing. So Mini Crate is a monthly subscription service. If you're in the States, it's $17. If you're in Europe, I think it's $19. And basically, they're exclusive models that replace existing models. So one of them is like a female Rupert. I thought that was really interesting and something I'll probably subscribe to.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I think the best part for us is that Signar tends to be pretty good for resculpts. So we get a lot of sweet resculpts. So I think we'll have a lot of usable stuff from that. A lot of the stuff they showed was like pinups a la their Gen Con models, which was pretty dumb. But they had some concept art for some sort of male quote pinup models that looked really cool. They had an Alton Ashley with like a big crossbow instead of a rifle. I think there was a Harlan version there and Bloody Bradigan with like a cool trench coat.
Yeah.
I think that's important. I think if you just stick with just the sexy female pinups, it's fair.
Yeah, it's dumb and you look stupid.
Yeah, which they have in the past. Easy. But... No, you're probably right. I don't know. I like the Mini Crate thing, and I was talking about it to a friend, and it was like, even if I subscribe to and I don't use all the minis, the secondary market for the minis that I don't want will probably be pretty good because they're only available through this Mini Crate deal, right? So if I pay the $17 a month and I get a miniature that I don't want to paint, don't want to use, I can probably just hit the secondary market and make everything back that I spent on it.
Right. Well, for sure. With the declaration that they're destroying the molds, right? So like these are literally going to be a one-shot purchase item.
Yeah.
Unless you buy in a secondary market off used. So definitely a neat idea.
Yeah, I think it's good. I think it's...
And they said that there's exclusive models for a 6-month subscription as well, right? So those will be pretty hot items, I think.
Yeah, I'm down with it totally. It's something I'm going to subscribe to. I think that was probably like the biggest corporate change. Like as far as models go, that was the biggest news. They talked about No Quarter Prime some, right? That seemed interesting, but I mean, you're either sold on No Quarter Prime already or you're not, I think is the deal at this point. I think.
Yeah, I'll agree. I like the idea. I'm not a huge, I don't read a ton of the fluff. I've always just been a miniature gamer. So being able to buy and read a magazine that has models and cool artwork is always appealed to me, as long as I don't have to read a ton of stories. My lack of literacy is a problem.
Okay. Anything else in the keynote that you want to talk about, Corey?
No, I actually just, Will and Will did a great job. Like they're both charismatic and they both speak well. And, you know, you're in front of a bunch of people streaming live to the internet. So like, I think they did a great job. I don't think there was anything in the keynote I didn't like, you know, like even the announcement of a faction year, which has me a little wary. I still think they're going to pull off. This is the first time, I think I said this when we were speaking last, this is the first time in probably 3 years that they got up there and what they said, I think they meant, and they were behind it 100% versus they were fatigued and tired or not quite fully behind it.
Yeah, they didn't seem tired. Like last year during the keynote and when they were like giving away the Mark III battle boxes that people had pre-ordered and stuff, man, everybody looked so beaten. Everybody looked like they were ready to go to bed. But this year, the staff seemed really into it. They seemed like they really believed everything that they were saying. And part of that might have just been the Friday morning thing versus Saturday night when everybody's been up for 3 days already, right?
Yeah, and it might be lead up and prep time. You know, this last year they rushed to get Mark 3-0. The year before it just might have been for whatever reason. Right? This year just seemed like there was definitely more belief in what they were doing.
Yeah, it certainly seemed that way. And last year's keynote was entirely forgettable. everybody was waiting for the big Grimkin reveal. They didn't reveal anything. This year, they actually showed models that were in the works. You know, they showed, like, Circle models and Scorn models and Mercenary models. Like, all these models that are coming out. And I think that it got the fan base a little bit more excited. Because you can see what's coming down the pipe versus last year. Even after the Grimkin reveal trailer, it was just poetry and images. It didn't mean anything, right? So that was cool. And then after that, like Trevor said, it was time for Masters. The keynote was at 9. Masters was supposed to start at 10, but they had us all sitting around twiddling our thumbs till about 20 after 12, which was very disappointing. I didn't eat because I thought Masters was going to start, and then it didn't. So by the time Masters started, I'm like starving for lunch at quarter afternoon. How about you, Corey?
I'd driven up from Camas that morning, so I'd been up since about 3, and actually, to be honest, because of work and all the weather and stuff going on up here, I'd only had about an hour of sleep since the Wednesday at 5 when I got up, so... Really, to be honest, I sat at a table and the time passed like I was, I didn't even really notice.
No. So, Trevor, you played in Masters?
I did indeed. The first heat, which was apparently a mistake.
Yeah, the second heat has a lot fewer players. Tell me, what did you take to Masters Heat 1?
So I shocked the world by pairing Haley 2 and Striker 2 together.
Oh my gosh.
For my lists. So a lot of people looked at me sideways for those. Like, you know, they were caught off guard. And yeah, it was all right. Did okay. Do you want me to go over the games or do we want to go round table?
So let's all talk about our first round games. How's that? I'll kick us off. Okay. I don't remember my opponent's name, so pardon me. I get Ron round 1. I got Haley 2, Nemo 1, and I drop Nemo 1 into Ron. And I really was going to lean on D-Cell for the majority of this match. He had a Siri as well, but I was pretty comfortable playing Nemo, and even when Ron feeded my opponent's dice really spiked. I think he removed 2 of my heavies and 2 fireflies on feet turn, even with D-cell up. So that was really sad. But then my opponent made an error at the end of the game where he gave me Ron's back from the Lancer. All I had left was like Junior and the Lancer and Nemo and a Squire, I think. But he gave me Ron's back on a no camp, and I chain lightninged him to death. So that was awesome. My dice were good to me, and it was like, Ron is dead! Yay! And he should have totally had that game, but that was a pretty big error that you can't come back from, I guess. So, yeah, between Nemo's gun, chain lightning, and Junior's gun, it sealed the deal. How about you, Corey? What was your round 1 like?
I dropped Kane 1 into Kalissa, so I played against Rhett. I don't remember a lot of how the game went down. I know I had some good dice rolls, because gun mages shooting jacks shouldn't work, and they tended to.
Okay.
I know my opponent had trouble hitting my blurred hiding in the forest calf, so it kept me in the game for next turn, I think I got lucky. He moved his caster out from where she was safe, and I just slammed my light charger over top of her. And then once she was knocked down from Hurricane, I just sort of walked up and shot her with everything else.
Oh, yeah, that works. So you threw like snipe on some blazers and had the Hurricane slam a charger into Kalissa, and then
I pushed forward hard. Hurricane, my charger was within 12 of his caster, so I just ran the charger up to just outside of melee, shot my charger in the back with a boost, and then shot Kalissa with the jack. And I think I just dead-eyed him, or just walked up with Kane and shot a couple times. At that point, a good chunk of his army and my army was missing, so.
Oh.
I don't remember the flow of the game. I just know we played a super tight game, and it was pretty dicey both ways.
I love it. Trevor, do you remember round one?
I don't remember much of my games.
Yeah, you were drinking, I think, all weekend, weren't you?
The majority of it.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I'll take some pictures, but Corey made me some very, very sweet custom tokens. If you want some custom tokens in the like of what Corey got me, you should get in touch with us via Messenger, and I think Corey can hook you up with some tokens. Right, Corey?
As long as they don't have anything intellectual property relating to Privateer Press.
Right, right. And you got to pay them for them. So just message the Storm Chamber and, yeah, and Corey will give you a price and shit. Okay? Trevor, what was your round one like?
So I didn't get the opportunity to kill any rep players, which was very sad. I did play against Mr. Chris Dancox, and I think he's the only opponent whose name I remember, so I apologize to all my other opponents. But he's playing Trolls. We'd met previously. He got to the gauntlet rounds at Adepticon, and we met there, but we didn't actually get to play, but we got to play round one at Lock and Load, which was pretty cool. He was bringing Gunbjorn and I want to say Doom Shaper 3.
Yeah, he ran
what was that?
He ran Doomy 3 and Gunny.
Doomy 3, yep. Okay, good. Yeah. Nailed it. Gunbjorn, I think there was a ton of Gunbjorn there, so it's something we should probably talk about. But this is Gunbjorn all over the place, and talking to people, they were saying that it's he's a reasonable drop into Ghost Fleet because he has Explosivo. And snipe on like a Glacier King or something, so you can take out those unit Ooh. Leaders pretty well.
Yeah.
But his turn of no damage from ranged attacks also pretty strong against Signar if you bring a bunch of guns. And he tends to bring like a lot of guns, which Signar doesn't love in a lot of our lists, and like Haley too, especially, as well as just a lot of armor. And board presence, you know, with the big Glacier King and everything. But round one was Extraction. We played a super tight game. The terrain was very interesting. We had two obstructions and two walls in the center of the table, sort of ringing the center of the table between the two flags in Extraction. And we both had a huge base. I played Striker 2. We both had a huge base in our list, so it was really... annoying KG? For them. Yeah, so my Stormwall ended up going on a far left side and flanked out really hard because it couldn't really maneuver in the center of the board. And my plan was essentially to put the Stormwall on the left flag and have it and or Striker kill basically everything that went over there. I got pretty lucky early. I ended up getting some shots. I went first, if I remember correctly, and I ran up, and then he decided not to turn on his stone the first turn to save the Fury. Because Gunbjorn tends to be pretty fury strapped as the game goes on. Okay. And I ended up getting a couple of like random pot shots with the Stormwall and stuff into his Axer, and I killed it. So he didn't have the +2 speed on the Glacier King, so it couldn't advance over the wall it was behind without like charging or trampling or something like that. So that was a pretty big deal for me because it really slowed him up. But played a super tight game. Basically, like all my Storm Lances died, and the Stormwall punched a whole bunch of stuff, and I ended up taking that down on Scenario.
Sweet. Striker on Scenario is always pretty nice.
Indeed, he's pretty good at Scenario.
Yeah.
You got to start off with a really nice guy to play against. I actually really like Chris.
Yeah, he's a sweet dude.
Yeah. Well, he's a Canadian, right? So, like, by default, he's pretty awesome. Yeah,
that is not true. Never mind. So
if it was a bad game against a Canadian, you feel free to let me know.
No,
I will call
no,
immigration
not, no,
services
no, no, no.
and see
somebody
if we can have
else,
him deported.
Somebody else. It's all right. So my round two, I go, geez, I think his name is Adam. And if Jaden is listening from Druid's Dice, I'm really I'm sorry. He's one of your friends that hangs out there in Washington. He's playing Kador. He's got a classic kind of Harkovich Cloud Wall list. I know Haley's the right drop here. It's really KG, the first two turns, I'm playing the classic Haley 2 Storm Lance, Storm Division build. I decide not to feat on turn 2 because the Scenario is not going to get away from me, and his threat ranges are predictable, and I out-threat him with the Storm Lances. So I decide to actually back up turn 2, and that's going to force him to come into the scenario and probably forfeit the cloud wall, which is fine. My turn three, I literally forgot to feat with Haley 2. I can't even remember the last time that I've forgotten to feat. It's been a long time, but I passed the turn and I was like, holy shit, I did not feat. Haley was probably within 8 inches of 4 K-Door heavies. So I helped my opponent decide to throw a Storm Lance from a Kodiak into Haley, and then a Juggernaut to the face ended it. And I don't want to say it's my most embarrassing loss. It is the most frustrating loss I've had in a long time. I can't believe I went to Lock and Load, played Masters, and forgot defeat. It's been years. So that ended my Masters run. I dropped and played in the Iron Arena for the rest of the day after that. By then, it was probably about 3:30, 4 o'clock. So, yeah, I played Iron Arena games for the remainder of the day. Corey, what was your round two?
I played against Eli from Seattle. Legion, Fiona 2. I dropped Kane 1 again because I think he's okay into that matchup. And really, to be honest, I came planning to play Kane all day.
Okay.
So it was Kane 1, Sons of Tempest. Game started okay. He won the roll, went first, jammed forward hard. I set up and removed 3 of his beasts. Sorry, no, I went first, moved up. He moved up, feated. And he played really well because he stopped his caster probably a quarter inch out of where I probably kill her and win. Because I, you know, Hurricane Deadeye run a model behind and I just start beating the crap out of her. So I removed an Angelius. I removed a Nerf and a Seraph. And then the second Angelius I shot at and missed. So I shot it again with Deadeye and aiming blazers and missed. So I shot it again with Deadeye, aiming blazers, and missed. And by then I was like, okay, well, I guess it just kills Kane. So he started his turn. He had a really good move. He moved in with his the Legion Beast, whose Animus is a pull or a push, one or the other. I think it's a push. And he moved in, pushed my models together to kill him to create a path to land, and then just moved in and killed Kane. So my game ended on bottom of 2.
That is
sad. And Eli
sad.
Played it extremely well.
Good job, Eli. We hate Legion players on this cast, but good job.
I don't. I think Legion's we're fine into Legion most of the time.
Yeah, that could be true.
I hated Legion in Mark II.
I mean, really, we just hate everyone who doesn't play Signar. So,
well, to be honest, Trevi, I hate everyone that beats me.
Also that.
Sure.
Like I'm a pretty bitter old man, right? So.
Just don't lose the mirror.
Oh my gosh.
Don't talk to me about my fourth round then. I lost the mirror.
If you ever want to know what like Corey is like in real life, picture a bunion that's also the life of the party. Like that's Corey Doyle summed up in one mental image, I think.
A bunion? I don't know what a bunion is.
It's like one of those things on your feet, right? Like a nasty old person. Like growth, like a wart, right? Like picture like a wart that shows up to a party and everybody loves him. Like that's Corey Doyle.
I don't know if I got the picture of a wart when I met Corey in person.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know if he's particularly wart-like.
Corey likes to pretend that he's like this grumpy old man or whatever, but Corey is a lot of fun. So
it's really a teddy bear.
Yeah. Like a Teddy Ruxpin that tells, like, dirty fairy tales.
Fact. Yeah, he's like a teddy bear from the 19th century.
Oh my gosh. Trevor, let's stop this tangent. What happened in round three?
Round three, I played against Protectorate. It was Take and Hold, and I played Haley, too, because she's pretty good against Protectorate.
A little bit.
And they played Malakas, and I forget what their other list was, but they played Malakas anyway. It was a pretty good list. It was like Tristan with 2 Redeemers and Eye of Truth, 2 Reckoners and a Vanquisher, I think. So pretty lot, big gun line, pretty solid drop. He moved up He went first and ran everything really far forward. I was sad. I think I killed a choir guy with like an arcane bolt and put Thorn behind a forest. And I was like, I don't know, maybe you try to kill Thorn. That seems fine. And he was like, I'm going to try to kill Thorn. And I was like, whoops, damn. And he ran Eye of Truth up and scourged Thorn so he could kill him with the Redeemers. And I was like, eh, that seems fine, because then I got to kill Eye of Truth. So I killed Eye of Truth, but my models tried really hard not to, which was really scary. I was hoping I could kill him and ding up his Vanquisher, and then I could have killed the Vanquisher with the Firefly and the Reliant, but I think the Stormstrider ended up missing a shot or something like that, and the Hurricane rolled pretty garbage for damage, and it was just a mess. So I had to like shoot Eye of Truth, like my whole army basically, to kill him. But we killed him and tied some other stuff up, and feed it with Haley, and she was like sort of kind of behind a forest and blocked in by the Firefly, and he decided he was going to kill Haley on her feet turn, and I was like, that seems unlikely, but go for it. And so he moved Malachus up and scourged the Firefly down. And then he had a Reckoner move up and used open fire with the Reckoner to shoot Haley. But you can't boost with open fire, so he needed 11 to hit with his feet. So if he rolls the 11, like, I'm probably dead. Because then she's minus 2 defense for the Redeemers, and the Redeemers can maybe hit a shot or two, and she's like super dead at that point. But he did not roll an 11, so I killed Malachus.
Very nice. So at this point, myself and Corey are out. Trevor, you head over to round 3. Corey, do you mind if I skip over your round 3?
I actually played round 3.
All right, but, do you want to tell about your round 3 game?
It was over super quick. It was Haley and Domon, and he didn't realize that Jake's Jack moved 16 inches.
Oh, easy peasy.
And he also didn't cast or pray on his Jack, so I just TK'd, charged. Wow.
That's awkward.
Yeah, I felt really bad. I don't think my opponent had ever seen it, and that's always the worst with Haley, is when your opponent hasn't seen it, and you're like, oh, you didn't realize that Jake's TK Energizer... Oops.
Yeah. It's like that point when you say, all right, Haley feats, and they go, what does that do? And you're like, oh man, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You poor baby.
So you killed him on.
Yep. So I killed him on the bottom of 1.
You're playing 4 or 3 Stormclads, right? And the Defender.
It's Haley two Stormclads, Defender, Jake's Stormclad.
Yeah. Yeah, that list is really good into Amon just regardless. So it's sad times for him, like all the way around, even if you just like attack his Warjacks.
Yeah, it seems
be honest, Thanatos was the only faction I wasn't worried about. Like Kane, Hurricane, Ace is pretty good in him too, because you can just kill off all the choir and eventually just kill the caster.
Yeah, for sure.
Seems good. Trevor, tell me about your round 3.
Round 3, I hit trolls again. There was a lot of trolls. I was shocked at the number of trolls that were at this tournament.
Loads of trolls,
just a whole trolling of them, a whole wagon full. But they were playing ADR this time, actually. So it was, Doomy 2 and Horgul.
Could be
and
worse.
I definitely looked at his sheet and was like, man, implacability is going to be a real big problem for me, because I'm going to try to TK him and we'll see how it goes. And then I picked Haley too, and he deployed his models, and I was like, no, wait, that's Doomshaper 2. That's a lot different caster. So he didn't have implacability. That was pretty great. He did, because he had ADR, he put a Earthborn Dire Troll into his list, and those are really obnoxious. So every troll player that tells you Earthborn Dire Trolls are bad, you punch them square in the mouth. They're immune to all elemental damage, plus they're very fast because there's almost always rough terrain on the table. Plus like they have access to rush or a bunch of damage buffs. It's just great. But the scenario was outflank. He was very worried that I was going to try to kill Doomshaper. So he built a big old brick of all his dudes in the middle and just sort of trundled up the table. And to his credit, it was a very good brick. And I definitely wasn't going to kill Doomshaper. He had shamans and everything in Janissa for elevation. And there was a sweet trench he could go into. So he had elevation and cover. And was behind clouds. It was just, it was crazy.
Elevation in a trench.
In a trench, yeah. That's definitely a thing. You can only not place her thing next to obstructions, and trenches, as it turns out, are not obstructions. So you can do that.
Oh, man.
So, that was pretty cool. Unfortunately, the scenario was outflank, so, or outlast, or the O1, whatever.
Was it the two big circles?
Yeah, two big circles. And so bricking up in the middle was not super helpful. He ended up... he had his Earthborn on one side. I was able to punch it to death with the Hurricane and then just sort of push things out from there between the Hurricane slamming stuff out of zones with its guns, like the Light War Beast. And I was able to, you know, kill one Dire Troll a turn that he was able to get in and eventually just went on scenario. So that was good.
That's good. Corey, did you play round 4 in Masters?
Well, I was there and there was a game and I was at the table and my army was on it. Did I play? I was matched up against Patrick Dunford.
It's easy. Easy peasy.
To be honest, I think in a day where I hadn't been up for 48 hours, I think I make more of a game of it, but I made a ton of just little mental errors. I let him basically shoot my defender off the table for nothing in trade. I just went, here's a defender, kill him with storm lances. It was Striker. I played Haley 2 into a Striker Storm Division list, and I just sort of gave him pieces as I went. So I went for an assassination. Had I hit it, I think I was maybe 40-60 to pull it off. And other than that, it was pretty much game. So yeah, my day ended 2-2.
I don't think Mr. Dunford is somebody you can afford to make even simple errors against. Yeah, he will probably punish you for that.
So no, he did.
You went 2-2 on the day.
Correct.
Trevor, you head into round 4 undefeated, correct?
Indeed.
And who did you face?
I played the mirror match, which was sad because my goal in every tournament is to dodge the mirror match because I don't like playing any lists that are good into the mirror match. Striker 2 can do it sometimes, and like Haley 2 can do it if they want to punch me in melee, but nobody wants to punch me in melee. So I played against Kara Sloan, and that was sad because she's like the ultimate boogeyman of the mirror match, outside of like Darius maybe. And so I played Striker 2, and I was like, this is occasionally a decent matchup. Maybe the scenario is good. And then it was Incursion, and he had 5 hunters, and it was just a mess. So
was his army purple?
It was indeed.
With some white highlights. His name was Gregory Chad.
He was an absolutely pleasant gentleman to play against. He, like, as much as I complain about the matchup being terrible, he was just a delight.
I put him on Saturday.
Yeah, he was
super nice. He's actually great. From Victoria, which is again in Western Canada. So,
oh, there you go. Easy peasy.
And he's also on Team Beaver this year for WTC.
Oh, is he? Well, then I will see him in Belgium. He was great to play against. He was very good. Definitely didn't really give me any outs whatsoever. I scored some scenario points and then all my stuff died. And Striker.
Okay. So you lose round 4. Did anybody play round 5 or was it done at that point?
It was over after round 4.
Okay. Yeah, the mirror match remains problematic. It's why I brought Nemo 1. But I think you're right. If you want to play the mirror, you've got to be able to fight Kane 3 and Sloan and Striker 1 if you want to fight the mirror. If you can handle those 3 matchups, I think you're probably in good shape, right?
Yeah, I think like the caster that makes the most sense to play is Striker 1, and he's just so boring. I don't want to do it. I'm not lame, so...
okay. Yeah.
So if it helps any, Trevi, I played Greg Saturday in the last game. of IG, and I avenged you.
Oh, excellent.
And probably the jankiest game ever. It was Sloan into Kane, Sons of Tempest.
I think I saw the middle of that game, but I didn't see how it ended.
Where I was absolutely getting myself pushed in?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, Kane was hiding pretty well. That was nice. And so was Kara. So
she walked forward into the trench, and I'm like, I need a 14. I'll just roll it. So I rolled a 14, knocked her on four dice. On four dice. So
oh, all right. Oh, that's actually. Oh, that's
it wasn't like I need a hard 14 on two or three. But I needed the 14, knocked her down, and if I pushed her back more than 2 inches, she was out of shot for the second shot on the hurricane. So I'm like, I can only push her 2 inches or I can't kill her. So I managed to hit her with the one good gun left on my hurricane because he'd almost killed it too.
That is a unexpected downside of the hurricane, that sometimes it's too good at its job and it ends up not being able to get the job done.
Right.
Oh, a little over exuberant.
Well, normally I can get a speed 18 pony in behind and then I don't slam you too far.
Right.
But when you kill off all of my murder ponies, Tempest Blazers die pretty easily to hunters when they can aim and boost.
Yeah,
and to a guy that's like, I'm going to... Well, he sacrificed for a turn the Colossal's movement. Now, I'm trying to remember because I was inebriated. So I'm trying to remember exactly what, but I'm pretty sure he trampled with the Colossal rather than shooting. And it just out of 10 of my Colossal, so I couldn't retaliate. And then just dropped a pod and killed three of my Blazers. Because he's like, well, wow. You're Dev 17 in cover, so I just can't shoot you.
That'll do it.
So you'd have 21. I'm not going to hit. So I'll just trample and zot kill you with a freaking pod. And I was like, oh, I did not see that coming.
And yet you play Signar.
I always miss the outside of the body. If it's something like that, I don't even think about the pod.
Right.
I'm not going
to lie.
In my game, he's Eli at Masters Day 1. He had to remind me Hurricane stops flying.
My first game with the Hurricane was similar. I played against the Fianna 2 Theme Force and... My opponent was complaining he couldn't charge it, and I was like, why not? There's just a forest. You just fly over it. And then he laughed at me, and then I felt bad.
That's exactly what happened in my game. Yeah. Like, so you stop flying with Hurricane. I'm like, I stop flying with Hurricane? Open up War Room, look. I'm like, oh, my crap, I do.
Like, wow, this matchup's really bad for you. They're like, yeah, don't remind me.
So day two so is Iron.
With her.
Oh, go ahead.
So now I just start most of my list with Hurricane when I think about playing Ace Legion. I'm like, I'll just start with Hurricane. And Legion can go get angry. Oracles isn't a problem anymore.
Right. So day two is Iron Gauntlet. Patrick Dunford wins Iron Gauntlet. Spoiler alert. We have a great interview with Patrick coming up at the end of this. Right? But do either of you want to talk about your Iron Gauntlet games?
I don't remember most of them.
Okay.
I played Kara Sloan. I played Sorcian round two, and I have no idea what happened to that game. I know it was Nemo against Sorcian. I won.
Oh, good.
I think I just killed everything. And then my first game was Aaron Allen playing COC, and I'm pretty sure my mistake there was I forgot to kill a model in the zone on two consecutive turns on the double circles, and Haley lost 5-4.
Yeah.
I hear you have to clear zones to win games, and I just left one of those little explodey bomb things behind a wall because I just maybe shouldn't have drank as much when I first got up in the morning.
Yeah. And Aaron is a pretty good convergence player. I like to say in our meta, like, I trump Aaron. Aaron trumps everybody else in our meta. Everybody else in our meta trumps me. There's like this whole circle of life locally. Trevor, did you want to talk about any of your Iron Gauntlet games?
Yeah, sure. I also played against Convergence. I played against Jeremy Lee round one.
Okay.
Which I was a little sad about because I don't like my Convergence matchup too well. But I played Haley because people say she's good. So, I did that. I set about, just trying to kill models and see where that got me. So I killed some servitors. That was pretty great. And then, Thorn got dominated and drugged to his, untimely demise.
Oh, yeah.
But my Hurricane was able to slam some stuff out of some zones, score a couple points early. My Storm Strider got killed, which is like contesting the other zone. Just got shot to death eventually. In hindsight, I had Arcane Shield on the Hurricane the whole game, and I think I probably should have started it on the Storm Strider for a turn or two just to blunt some of the early shots, but I didn't do that. So
I think the Storm Strider might be more important in the matchup to get rid of the Servitors early. Because the chain lightning, like, okay, so if he chains the shield guard, all the electro leaps are going to start getting rid of shield guards, but go ahead.
I agree, but it doesn't actually like kill anything important. Whereas the Hurricane does. So, you know, the Hurricane can kill the Primaxium or the, Primaxium, and, the Storm Strider can't do that.
Right.
Really wanted my Hurricane
true.
To be. All brand spanking new.
Okay.
I ended up getting up early on scenario. Jeremy pushed the other side super hard. And then I mildly diced him. I put a Firefly in the zone, and he didn't want to spend a bunch of focus dominating it because Iron Mother was dominating that zone as well, and the Hurricane could have just shot at her a bunch and killed her. I think all the Servitors were dead at that point. So she went to camp like three. So she like imperiled it and then missed a mitigator shot to knock it down, and then his assimilator charged it and missed its charge attack and didn't kill it, so he didn't score. So that was weird. And then I scored a bunch of points and ran everything but my Hurricane and Haley into that zone. And, then almost punted the game super hardcore. He ran his Primaxium into the zone the Hurricane was in, along with an assimilator that I'd been shooting all game and not doing a ton of damage to, but it was on like six boxes or something, with no arms. And the Hurricane punched up the Primaxium, and the Primaxium went. And I made a conscious decision not to punch the assimilator because I wanted to deal as much damage to the Primaxium as possible and potentially take out systems. And so the Primaxium went and made an accretion servitor and put the arms back on, or the melee arm back on the assimilator, and almost killed my Hurricane. So that was awkward. Ooh. But then I was like, nah, it's fine. The Hurricane will kill everything. So I think Haley killed the assimilator, and my Hurricane went and punched the Primaxium. But I had like, I don't know, it was like a minute on my clock, and I decided not to move my Hurricane. I was like, it was like already fighting the Primaxium. So I was like, well, just fight. It'll be great. I killed the Primaxium, and that would have scored me to 5 points. And the simulator was dead, and Jeremy reaches out his hand to congratulate me on my hard-fought win, and I looked down at the table, and the stupid accretion servitor is still in the zone. And I was like, ah, this little piece of garbage. I was like, well, my Hurricane will punch it and probably kill it. And then I realized that it was on the same side the assimilator was on, and the assimilator had knocked my arm out, and I didn't move the Hurricane. And I was like, this is just the worst. But I had a focus left, and I said, well, I'll buy an attack on it, and we'll see where we go. And I rolled a 6, and I killed it. And I won the game anyway. We talked about afterwards. I had Jake's hadn't activated yet, so she could have walked up and just shot it. And we rolled it out. She really rolled the 11 and killed it. So that was okay. But it was a little dicey there for a bit.
All right. Any other splendiferous games in the gauntlet you want to talk about?
I played obviously I played the second round. Corey, did you play any more games in the Iron Gauntlet?
Yeah, I played Alex Cosma in round two.
Oh, yeah.
And he was, again, it was Sorcerer versus Nemo.
And he's Team White on the US WTC.
Yep, he is Team White. And that was, he didn't bring theme, so he's already down 9 points to me. And I think he underestimated the amount of damage that Nemo could do. And then I played the zone while it was I can't remember the name of the scenario, but the two rectangles and the objectives in the middle offset.
Entrenched?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what we're going to call it.
I was able to put Lance as sort of ringing the one zone that Nemo got into. He didn't contest on, I went second. He didn't contest on my turn two, which allowed me to score on his turn, score on my turn to two. I was able to kill the objective on his feet turn to go to three. And then he couldn't get into the zone to contest because there was a weird objective in the corner. So the terrain really just honestly favored me in a huge way.
Hmm.
And it looked really good for him to start because there's like a nicely placed wall and some good cover. But there's just odd obstruction in my zone. And I'm like, well, it's covering the entire corner of the zone. So he's, I only got to put three models face to base to stop him from being able to get in.
Hmm. That's pretty good.
And then again, Nemo removed almost all of his Widowmakers by, I killed Kel Balok by running again to combat, charging and shooting. He's prowled, so stealth, so I auto miss. I shoot my own guy, I bounce, I kill him.
Okay, sure.
So, like, I got lucky because, like, I shot my own Cav on the hill in the back without Lattermore. So, like, I needed an 8, I hit the 8. So, like, I didn't have an unlucky game. I rolled really well. Nemo's damage from Eleves was huge. I had two chances to kill Eris, who was actually the bane of my existence that game. And I'm like, well, I need to get Eris out of here because she's already shot at me once and almost got me. And if I go if she stationaries me, I die. So I really need a 3 on this die 3 Eleve, and I roll my 3. And then I'm like, I need 7 for damage on non-feature and a killer. There's my 7. So dice worked really well in my favor that game, and I cannot even complain.
Okay.
But again, another one of my games ended before turn 3. Or it ended during turn 3. I don't think I played a game past turn 3 this whole weekend.
That's good. You were inebriated, so you couldn't have long games.
Well, they weren't long either.
Right. That's what I mean. Trevor, what happened to you in round 3?
So I have a tangential anecdote, which was the first War Machine Weekend qualifier I ever played in, I think did well in was it's called the Dark Omen Invitational. It was like years and years and years ago. I used to run in the New England area, and I played against, a local player playing Haley 2, and I was playing Striker 2 cause I'm not original. And he cast old school D-cell, so +2 defense and armor on Haley. And the way that matchup usually went is that if you could kill Iris, then Stryker just full camped and killed Haley's entire army by himself, because like there's literally nothing she could do to him. And it was pretty great. And a gun mage walked around a forest and shot at Iris and... Oh, no, he aimed, I think, actually. He aimed because he needed a 9 to hit and then a 9 to kill her, and he rolled it. It was awesome. And then I won that game.
Okay.
So just kill Iris, like, with random stuff. That's how you win. I didn't get to do that in my second round of Iron Gauntlet, though, because my opponent did play in theme, and he didn't have Iris. But I played against Mr. David Beauchamp from Canada, and he played Butcher 3, and I played Striker 2, and he said that he wasn't expecting Striker 2, which is weird because Striker's really good into Butcher 3. So he went first, which is sad because he was in Winter Guard command, so his stuff was like on the midline of the table on the first turn, and I was upset. There was a sweet huge forest in the middle of the table, which was pretty annoying because most of his, he had like a bunch of Kodiaks and stuff, and most of his stuff had Pathfinder and mine didn't. And I had a Colossal. And so he could just charge it through the forest. So I threw my Lancer up in the middle of the table and I rebuked Butcher. And in that matchup, the only way to remove a rebuke is with Ruin. And so I put the Stormwall, in charge range of Ruin and one of his Kodiaks. And so, it was basically like, I guess you can charge Ruin at the Stormwall and it will probably be dead, but then Butcher will never do anything ever again. And he was like, that's fine, I'll take that trade. And I was like, damn, okay, fine. And so he killed the Stormwall and I got to kill Ruin and a Kodiak. And then I pulled a Tim and I forgot to feet with Stryker.
Oh my gosh.
Like, oh, what will I do? And then I looked at the table and I was like, oh, it's actually like the only thing it would have done, because I killed the Kodiak and I killed Ruin with, you know, like literally my whole army charging them. Like they were probably not going to survive. And the only thing my feet would have done would, it probably would have killed or at least crippled his other Kodiak. And, it would have kept like my whole army pretty safe. But it wouldn't have been like a particularly explosive feet turn. So it wasn't that big of a deal. And, as it turned out, that forest in the middle, plus like Arcane Shield and D-Cell and Storm Lances, makes it really hard for Winter Guard to ever hurt them ever. So a bunch of Winter Guard shot at Storm Lances, didn't do anything. Nothing was able to charge because it was a huge forest and stuff was rebuked, and I was pretty far away. So not feeding was actually pretty great, because the next turn, my Storm Lances charged out and killed like 30 Winter Guard. And I started scoring and I was feeling really good. We traded scoring, Butcher and Striker kept clearing each other's zones, or our respective zones, cause it was entrenched. Eventually he'd gotten a couple of charges with like random Winter Guard onto my objective and gotten it pretty low. And he was at 3 points. So if he kills the objective and then clears the zone, I think I just had like Lattermore in or something, so that's not a big deal. Then he could win the game. And I was super worried about him charging my objective with, it was basically everything was dead. So it was like, I was like, man, his dogs could like Energizer and then charge my objective and then he would win. So I put Striker in the sweet place where if anything charged the objective, he would free strike it and he would kill it. And then I flipped my clock and I went, wait a minute, I've upkept rebuke on those dogs for the last like 6 turns of this game. What am I doing with my life? And he went with Andre Malakoff, the man, the myth, the legend, and he razor winded my objective. And he said, I'm going to boost. And I said, okay. And he picked up 3 dice and I said, well, it's a bunker, so you only roll 2 dice. And he was like, that's too bad. And then he rolled a 9 and killed it anyway and won. So the moral of the story is to remember that you cast Rebuke and then just cast D-Cell instead of putting Striker in more places. And then my objective survives and I kill Butcher. But it was a super close game. It was super fun. You know, it just like Butcher and Striker's killing everything with swords and axes and guns and stuff. And it's always a fun matchup, honestly. And obviously Dave's like a super great guy to play against. So. I didn't feel bad about losing it, but that was my Iron Gauntlet.
Sweet. So while you guys were off having Iron Gauntlet fun, I was playing in a team.
Are you there? Can you hear me?
Sorry. I can hear you now.
All right. So while you guys were off doing the Iron Gauntlet, I did the team tournament. I had filled out the lists, 75-point pair, and then it's like 5 minutes to the tournament and they're like, no, this 50-point lists, and you have to write out 2 sheets at lock and load, and I was like, shit, it took me like 20 minutes to write out those sheets because I don't write anymore. I didn't even have lists at 50 points, so I had like 5 or 10 minutes to whip up 2 50-point lists. I played Nemo and Haley 2 again. Round 1, I got Ragnor, double colossal, and I always love it when this happens. Like, he looks at my list, I look at his list, and I look at him, and I go, you're playing Ragnor, and I'm playing Haley, and he's like, yep, done. Like, there was no reveal. Get to the table, I wound up killing Ragnor with some sweet TK shenanigans, and Energizer shenanigans, and then, round 2, I don't remember who I played, I'm sorry. I apologize. Round 3, I played in a Balder 1. That was a really cagey and contentious matchup, but well fought on both sides. And then round 4, I played against Scorn, Zadash. I made a huge error and did not feat round 2 on purpose, but lost Thorn in a Stormclad. But no matter. Haley's got it. She TKs herself, TKs the dash, puts temporal acceleration on Jake's Jack, and, you know, 4 attacks later, that's all she wrote. So that was good. I went 3-1 in the team tournament. Our team went 3-1 in the team tournament. Luke Johnson, one of my roommates, was on the team. And then Tate from Haven Gaming here in Salem was on our team. So it was Signar Legion Rhett is what we had. And it was a fun time. We had a really great time playing the team tournament.
Who won the team tournament? Was it Keith and Tim's team?
I don't remember. It was not.
No, it was a team from Vancouver. I'm trying to remember names, some horrible names. I think it was, I can't remember their third player, but I know it was, why am I forgetting names? Two buddies of mine that played out of Vancouver, three, and I just can't for the life of me remember the names. Blaine.
Yeah. I think Banky's team.
Oh, I apologize.
Came in
I apologize
second.
For getting the guys' names. They right. beat Banky's team. Banky won his game. And the other two guys lost.
Yeah. And then they had some brand new prizes to give out, which were gold, silver, and bronze focus tokens. And they gave out a baggie to everybody on every team. So it was probably like 20 focus or fury tokens in there. Really nice looking tokens, metal. So we will probably see those come into like general prize support, I would imagine, sooner rather than later.
From what I was told when I was talking to James about it, was they were prize support for tournaments that PP 10 is going to attend for now, and eventually they may become standard prize support.
Yeah, they look great. So anyway, yeah, that was a good time. Did you guys do anything else with your weekend other than not win any big events like me?
Well, I drank.
Well, I all right, we should know have that. Drunk more.
I barely drank at all. I did play in the Iron Arena quite a bit. I played a lot of Maddox, Sturgis, and Jakes too, with varying degrees of effect. Maddox, Devil Dogs, still really good. Jake's too, still really bad. And man, I want her to be good, but she's still really bad. And if I ever can find a Jake's too list that I feel is above average, I will let everybody know. But I've not found that list yet. Yeah, that's about it. So
I played a game against the world champion of War Machine, Mr. Patrick Dunford. Using the terrifying Grumble Bumpkins, and it was awful.
So did you buy into Grimkin, Trevor?
Oh, no.
No?
So, no. Oh, Pat was using the Grimkin.
Yeah.
Not me. Yeah. I played Haley 2.
Oh, okay. That seems... I'll tell you,
yeah.
Haley 2... For Grimkin being basically an all melee force, it feels like Haley 2's worst matchup into an all melee force. Like normally,
it's bizarre. No, you're right. It's there are no guns, and I don't know how she wins. It's ridiculous.
Because you have Arcane Vortex on the Cage Rager, right? You
yeah.
have probably
not
a bunch
like,
of Kravitz
like
with Shield Guard.
Or Inter Arcane Vortex, where you spend a turn and it goes away.
No,
it's
no.
Like, It's an unlimited amount of Arcane Vort. You just cannot spell that army.
No, no. And it's pretty much immune to guns, okay? Because they're going to have Kravitz everywhere that are shield guards and they're lessers.
Yep.
And they have like just enough hitboxes where boosted PAL 15s might not kill them. So, you know.
And you honestly, like, you don't want to kill them because you'll give them corpses for more Arcane Vortexes and you'll trigger their Arcana.
Yeah.
Is dumb.
Yeah, Grimkin are going to be really interesting to figure out. I was actually talking to Jaden Owasa about, and Jaden, I'm sorry if I pronounced your last name wrong, about Grimkin and about the Arcana. And none of the Arcana are more powerful than the majority of feats in this game. The difference...
Shroud's pretty good.
Shroud's good. Sacrifice is good. The difference is when people pop the Arcana, they're doing it in response to something that you are doing, right? So, like, the text is really not more powerful. But basically what they're doing is negating what you want to do when you want to do it, right? And they can do that three times a game. And that's pretty powerful. So if you want to fight Grimkin, you really need to pay attention to their Arcana.
And like stuff like Shroud in particular, you almost have to play it like it's in effect for, you know, until it's popped. Because especially with those Krabbits, if you just randomly kill them, which is they're like Shredder stats, basically. They're right at the point where you can accidentally kill them.
Right, they have like 12 boxes or something in their arm. Right. 12.
And even if you don't kill one, the next turn they'll Shield Guard to that one and you'll kill it and give everybody stealth. So like my Hurricane was, had to essentially like act like it was range 5 for most of the game, because if one of its shots kills a Krabbit, then the rest of its shots will miss unless it's within 5 inches. So that's stuff you sort of have to play around. It is pretty nightmarish to try to get your head around. It's awful. And yeah, also Dreamer. So Pat played Dreamer, and her spell Enfeeble is really stupid.
What is Enfeeble?
It's -2 to attack and damage rolls forever because it's an upkeep. So have fun with that.
What?
It's for a model/ unit. Yep.
Oh, God,
so my Hurricane was Rat 4, Mat 4, POW 14, big guns, POW 11, little guns, POW 18 in melee. It was fucking didn't kill anything.
Huh. That seems really bad. And especially because that -2 applies on the blast damage. So your blast damage goes from 13 to 7 to 5, right?
Yeah.
Man, that is like struggling to kill arm 11 and arm 12 guys with blast damage. That's really bad. Ugh. So, I did not play against Grimkin, but I'm looking at what they're doing, and I'm thinking, I don't know if you have to have a plan for them, but you have to know what they do, or your life is going to be hell. So... everything is sort of tied to getting corpses. Like, their beasts are absolute crap until they get corpses. And then their beasts are like, oh, well, we were POW 16, now we're POW 19. Like, oh, okay, you know?
It's not like they're going to have trouble, because they'll be probably in Menagerie and start with a free one, and then also the Death Knell will have at least one, and stuff will probably have died. So the Death Knell can just, like, give corpses to whatever. So it's pretty easy that they get corpses most of the time.
Right, and I do feel it's problematic that, like, they're pretty resilient to guns, and for a melee force, I mean, you can fight them with melee. Striker 2 might be okay. The problem is there are Arcana that, like, oh, your unit's going to charge? No, they're not. And, in that turn that you need your unit to charge, suddenly, it's like rebuke on a stick, right?
Right. And it's not like you can play around it and just be like, well, I'll drop this if they bring that, because they could just pick their Arcana after they see your list.
Right. Yeah. It feels pretty good.
Honestly, I think is really stupid.
Since they get three of them, right? Because they can say, oh, okay, this caster is going to be my Signar drop. What Arcana do I want to play in a Signar? Or this is going to be my Trolls drop. What Arcana do I want in a Trolls, right? So, right.
And they could even say, I'm going to bring Shrouding to play against Signar, but if you're going to one up them and be like, well, I'll play a bunch of, melee stuff, Storm Knights and stuff, they'll be like, oh, I just won't take Shrouding. I'll take Pandemonium. I'll take something better. Like, whatever.
Yeah.
I'll take Desolation because you don't have Pathfinder.
So, any other takeaways from Lock and Load? Corey?
No, I had an absolute blast.
I had a good time as well.
I had a great time. I needed it with all the stuff going on up here. It was a nice getaway week. And I really think that, I've other than last year, and last year it just felt unenergetic, I've actually loved every Lock and Load I've gone to. And like my first one I went to, I played relatively competitively. The next three I just didn't care about. I just went down to have fun. And then this one was the same thing. I went down more to have fun than to play tournaments. Because to be honest, other than WTC, I just want to play games and have fun and laugh. And WTC is the same thing. It's just I have a team that relies on me, so I have to be more serious. But it's seeing the guys that you see there, like all the knock on the competitive players. I don't think I played a single game this entire weekend against a guy that I thought was negative.
Yeah.
Like even the game with Alex went really poorly for Alex and Aaron Gauntlet, and he was laughing throughout the entire game.
I will not right? say I think the that's... same, but I will say that the energy was better. I think a big problem with last year with the low energy was like, I think they announced Mark III in March, and then they didn't come out with it till the end of Lock and Load. So you have all these people sort of playing a dead game, and they know they're playing a dead game. And they're just waiting for Mark III, which we didn't get to play till Sunday. So everybody's playing in tournaments that, like, they feel largely don't matter. They just want Mark III to come out. But you can't release a new edition and then play a major con the next day. It just can't work like that. So, the energy this year was pretty good.
Actually, one of the big takeaways I liked was that Iron Gauntlet in the format it was in is now dead.
Yes.
Thank God.
So there's no more Iron Gauntlet games. And I think that was a great move in that sense. And effectively now every Steamroller every Masters event that's sanctioned or every Champions event that's sanctioned is just a qualifier. So now hopefully next year for Iron Gauntlet, instead of being struggling to get 16 and having to dig deep, now more players have chances to enter and actually come down and play. Because I'd rather see a 6 or a 7 round tournament to see who the champ is and have guys just win one, get in, right? Then the Iron Gauntlet bullshit with 3 lists, pick one.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of a 3 list format.
The one reservation I have is that they're going to swap the format of the final event between Masters and Champions. I kind of wish they'd just pick one. Assuming that, I don't know, they become a little more sort of judicious with their selection of the casters that are on ADR. I think it could be interesting.
Well,
so far it's just been like the your newest casters go on ADR, even if they're Beth Maddox.
Well, the problem is we've had Maddox for 3 seasons on ADR. Kane 3 is really interesting. Yes. Darius is really interesting.
Yes.
But like, man, it doesn't feel like Signar has, like, this is your clear all-comers. Like, the problem with Darius Maddox and even Kane 3 is, like, do you want to drop this stuff into Scorn? Do you want to drop this stuff into Minions? It feels bad.
I think, can Maddox not play that okay?
Yeah, Maddox
or Striker 3, right? Even. Striker, I think, 3, once Gravediggers maybe come out, Striker 3 is going to be kind of a big deal.
Yeah, that's possible. I don't know yet. But it does. It certainly does not have the easy answer of, like, oh, we're going to play Haley 3 and one of these casters, right? Or Haley 2
right.
and one of these casters. It doesn't feel like there's a super strong answer there. I will say that Maddox feels better with the amount of terrain I'm seeing. I saw less terrain at Lock and Load than I've seen in local tournaments and regional tournaments. I actually counted terrain. Most of my tables had 6 pieces of terrain at Lock and Load, and they tended to be smaller. When I play regional and local tournaments, I tend to see upwards of 8 these days, and they tend to be larger.
The guidelines from 2017 definitely made a shift.
Yeah, and then the other question is now that we have Steamroller 2017, and maybe we'll save this for next week, but, like, is Haley 2 still the number one caster in Signar with 2017 rules? And I think that that's
more
up
so,
for debate.
I think, now.
Well, let's save Which that topic sucks. For next week. I think let's tie it all up here. We've been over an hour, and we still have, like, a 45-minute interview with Patrick Dunford, IG champion, at the end of this thing. So let's tack that on to the end. It's Corey, myself, and Patrick. So listeners can take a listen to that.
Congratulations to Brandon Andrews for winning with Crix. Maybe not so much congratulations. Also, congratulations to Keith Christensen for getting to the final round with Signar. good on him. Playing no Haley 2, Kane 3, and Haley 3, which is pretty sweet. Haley 3 out of theme, old school Haley 3.
Yeah.
So good for him.
Yeah, I think that's still probably really strong, actually.
Definitely.
So with that all said, Trevor, give us a sign out.
I hope everyone is locked and loaded after this sweet recap of Lock and Load. Good night.
Sweet. All right.
We did. I mean, they did an absolute beating on me.
Yeah, we played, the final round of Masters, I think?
Yeah, we played in round 4. I was sober was my problem. I totally blame it on that.
Yeah. Well, you quickly corrected that mistake.
No, I did. I was in a good spirits the next day.
I was sober all weekend. I had 2 drinks. I went to this bar, Scotty Brown's or something near Lock and Load. And I told the waitress to bring me a drink of her choice. And she brought me this $14 martini with a flower floating in it.
Wow.
It was an error. It was a mistake.
I told Aaron I was short on alcohol, and Aaron showed up with 3 bottles and a cooler full of booze.
I had this really nice canteen that I lost. And on the day of Lock and Load, I showed up, and Chad from the 4-Man Meta podcast was drinking out of this bottle. And I said, that looks like my really nice canteen. And he goes, this is your canteen. I found it in Lucas's car. And I said, I want my canteen back. And he said, we can't have it because right now it has rum and Coke in it. And I'm like, dude, it's 8 a.m. So...
So we started late is what you're saying?
That's right. So I don't...
Because I'm pretty sure Saturday morning I rolled over at 6, and that's when I started.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you Canadians.
So I played Pat's last round, had a massive headache, went back to the hotel, picked up Subway on the way, got out to the room, sat in a chair, and I had 3 guys rooming with me, so I didn't know what beds they'd spoken for or whether, what was going on. So I sat in the chair, I turned on the TV, ate about a third of my sub. I had it sitting on my legs stretched out and the sub started sitting on my shirt. And I woke up at 2 in the morning with the sub sandwich still on my shirt sitting in the chair. So I rolled out of the chair, went to go to the bed, didn't quite make the bed, pulled pillows and blankets off, and just slept on the floor.
Well,
I did manage to put my sandwich on the table so I didn't lay on it also. So when I woke up in the morning, I had an entire night of sleeping on the floor and everything hurt. And I'm like, oh, where's my Tylenol? And I went for my backpack and I'd forgotten it at home with my cards. So well, I guess if I don't have cars, I don't have Tylenol, I guess I have rum and Coke. It seems like the right solution.
I guess. Well, look, I don't want to take everybody's whole night doing this, because I actually have to go pretty quickly. But I do want to just ask Pat some questions about his Lock and Load experience. And Corey, we can go over hours tomorrow with Trevi.
Yeah, sounds good.
Is that good?
Sounds good to
sounds
me.
Good.
So we are here with Mr. Pat Dunford. This is Pat's second time on the show, and he came over across the great big pond and won IG. Isn't that right? Sure. Sure.
Yes. So... this was my first US comp. I couldn't resist the lure of the IG World Championship, and I'm very glad I came. I met a lot of really cool people and ended up winning the event, so fantastic stuff.
Yeah. So this was your first time coming to an American con. Was there a different sort of experience between an American con and a European con?
Yeah, there was a little, not a lot. One of the cool things about War Machine is it's a pretty universal game, right? The rules are played the same way wherever you go. So you can sit down across the table in another continent against someone you've never met, and you still play the same game. Obviously, Privateer Press being out in force for Lock and Load makes it special. And it reminded me, probably the closest con I'd been to that was similar was SmogCon in the UK, where we also have privateer press people and keynotes and that kind of thing. So it wasn't a world apart, but it definitely had its own unique charm. From a meta point of view, things were really up in the air just because we recently had a lot of changes, right? We had Grimkin get launched. We had a lot of people playing trolls in CID, and there were a ton of battle engines just on every single table. So there was a lot of cool stuff going on the tabletop.
So did you see battle engines before the battle engine CID in Europe?
Basically never. You saw them maybe in casual lists, and occasionally someone would optimistically put one in a pair. But for example, I walked past a table playing Masters in the qualifier, and there were 6 battle engines on that table.
Oh, wow.
And yeah. And I've never seen anything like that before. They were all over the place.
Yeah, they were. And made a difference in a great many games. Jaden from Druid's Dice played against an Emo 3 list with 2 Storm Striders. So it has felt like for Signar players, the heavy metal theme list is stronger than Storm Division. I don't know if that's necessarily true, but so, it feels like Nemo 3 is going to make that adjustment from Storm Division to heavy metal pretty painlessly.
So I think the player he played was Gregory Chad, who is a Canadian WTC player, and I think the decision by Greg before the event, because we talked before it, was that he was only going to run lists he was thinking were potential pairings for WTC. So he brought down 5 lists for the weekend, ran through a bunch of them, and I think the change is in fear of when they're going to drop the CID Stormlast change.
Right.
Yeah. So the Strider got a buff, and its Electroleaps are good, its POW is good. And it might just be the replacement for the Lance change if Lances don't get the Lattimore buff. Because now the Strider gives a buff for everyone else to hit, making it easier to hit. Whereas the Lances are losing that +2.
Sure. Completely agree with that logic. The Storm Strider now is really, really strong. I was using one myself this weekend, and the thing is insane. It deals with heavy targets over a series of turns. It deals with infantry. Like you said, Corey, it is a good replacement for Storm Lances. Just because it can deal with all kinds of different targets and it's reasonably resilient. To answer your question, Tim, I think you're right that it goes great in heavy metal, but it does also go in Storm Division. So I think both theme forces will still see some table time.
Absolutely. So tell me what your 2 lists you took to, well, actually 3, right? Into IG. What were your lists?
Yeah, so for those who aren't familiar with Iron Gauntlet, it has a pretty unusual format that I think is unique to the Iron Gauntlet, where you take 3 lists. There's no requirement to play each list once, but in the final 2 rounds, you have what's called Gauntlet Rounds. In Gauntlet Rounds, you create a new list once you know which caster your opponent is playing and you've seen all their lists. You create a new list using only the models you've played with in previous rounds. So if you like, you can just stick to one list and play it through the whole event. But the more lists you play in early rounds, the better off you are in later rounds because you have more models to choose from and more flexibility. So with that in mind, my first list was Haley 2, playing in heavy metal. I'm basically playing the same list that Yale is playing and wrote about a lot in his blog recently, which is the build with a Storm Strider. I say that because heavy metal has a lot of really expensive pieces, right? So there aren't very many builds that have a Storm Strider. They tend to look the same, but this one is Hurricane, Thorn, Storm Strider, couple of Fireflies, and a Reliant, and then the usual gaggle of free solos.
Sure.
That's my primary list. I think it's probably just the best all-round list in the game. It has a ton of great matchups and very few things that it's really bad against. So I think that list is just excellent. Okay. And then my first choice to pair it was with Striker 1. Striker 1 is one of my favorite casters in Mark 3. I've had a lot of success with him in European events. And I'm still playing the same list that I used in SmogCon at the start of the year, with double Storm Lances, Lattimore, Hurricane, Firefly Charger. And that list is really leveraging Striker's upkeep spells and his feet. And basically, it's a very fast list with very good shooting that's incredibly resilient, which gives it a lot of scenario pressure.
Okay.
So that was my main pair. For my third list, I chose Kara Sloan for a couple of reasons. First off, she used very different models. I was running her with defenders and hunters, and that gave me access, theoretically, gave me access to more stuff in the gauntlet rounds. And then she also was a very different threat. She was the only list that wasn't running a lot of lightning. So I thought she would be helpful into things like the Mirror and Kruger 2, for example. And I know that people really hate playing against Kara Sloan. So I thought that gave me some power in the pairing process.
Sure.
I personally also hate playing with her. So I wasn't going to drop her unless I thought I had a really strong matchup. But I knew that it would make people shy away from lists that potentially would be better into Haley or Striker.
Why do you dislike Kara Sloan in the IG format?
It's not so much the IG format. I just think as a caster, her game plan is quite predictable and hinges a lot on rolling dice. Her feat just gives you two rounds of shooting, essentially. And if that feat turn isn't as effective as you want, it can be really disastrous. I prefer casters that play more aggressively up the table and have more flexibility. She's just not really my cup of tea, but she is really good, and I understand a lot of people like playing her.
Gotcha. With those three casters, were there any matchups that you thought were problematic overall for you?
Basically, no. I think in Signar right now, you can cover most of the field with two casters, and adding a third was just a luxury that meant I wasn't really worried about anything. I will say, though, that it's not that simple because your opponent also has three lists to choose from. So although in theory you can cover anything with your three lists, you still have to pick one of those lists to play. So if, for example, you run into a circle, if I ran into a circle player and they had Kruger 2 and Wormwood as two of their three, well, I would hate dropping Haley 2 or Striker 1 into Kruger 2 because that whole army is lightning. And Kara Sloan would be great against that. But Kara Sloan doesn't have as good a matchup into Wormwood. So although in theory I can cover everything, it's not actually that simple. And sometimes the three list format feels very list chickeny because both people have so many potential options to choose from.
Do you feel that most people in the IG format have a list that they never intend to play?
I think they have their favorite list. And they favor that list or a pair above the third. I think because so many tournaments are two list events, people tend not to build with a third list in mind. Yeah, maybe some people don't intend to play them, or maybe some people just would rather go with what they know best. But there's definitely, I definitely felt like people weren't always intending to play all their lists, and I personally wasn't intending to play Kara Sloan.
Gotcha. So was there a particular matchup that you had over the weekend that was exceptionally difficult for you?
I had some tough games. The most difficult one, I think, was or the kind of the closest in terms of how much stuff died and what the score is at the end, was in the second round against Jake Van Meter playing Legion. And we actually ran into one of those kind of list chickeny situations that I spoke about just now. He was terrified of my Kara Sloan list, which was great news for me, because it gave me power in the pairing process and I didn't really want to play it anyway. And because it was round two, the Iron Gauntlet Finals is a 16-player invitational. So we were going to play two rounds and then cut to Gauntlet, which meant we were only going to play two of our three lists. Gotcha. I'd already played Haley 2. Haley 2 is fantastic into Legion, and I would have loved to play her again, but I wanted more flexibility. If I played her a second time, then I'd only be playing that list for the whole event. So I went for Striker 1. And we ended up playing Striker 1 versus Fianna 2, which turned out to be a really close matchup, where we're running models with very similar threat ranges. We both have really powerful defensive feats, and there was a lot of piece trading and back and forth.
Do you feel like in that matchup against Fianna with Striker that whoever feats last has the upper hand?
Yes. And one of the key points about that matchup was I went second, and Jake ran forwards just outside of my threats, and I didn't move anything on my first turn.
Oh,
right?
Wow.
Because he positioned exactly where he wanted to be, right? He didn't move his maximum speed. So I just effectively passed the turn. I think Striker put out his upkeeps and shuffled about 2 inches forwards. And then he was like, huh. And he realized that he couldn't move any further forward either without getting alphaed by me. And he wasn't yet in his zone. So he kind of also shuffled around, and I was able to start then advance and start scoring first, forcing him to feet first and come into me. And then I got to feet second,
right?
Which gave me a big edge.
So he's either going to forfeit to you 2 points or allow you to alpha him. And that's sort of a bad position to be in. I'm actually surprised that he chose Fianna if you had Sloan. So it just feels like Sloan is really strong into the matchup. But I've not played it, so I'm not certain.
I've only played it once or twice. He told me himself that he thought his Fianna list was the only one that had a chance into Sloan, and I think he was right. His other two were really, really bad into it.
Okay.
So I think it was a case of making the best of a bad situation. The way our list lined up, whatever combination you pick, I think my list had a slight edge against his, and Fianna was his best choice overall.
Gotcha.
Well, Fianna is a better drop into, isn't a bad drop into to Sloan, because it's, if you don't let hunters sit to aim, they do need 11s. And every time they miss, you get to advance. So he walks up, shoots, and then you're like, oh, I back up 2 inches.
Yes.
Now, potentially, I'm making you shoot harder, or maybe I've taken a hill and now you need 13s. Like the feet, the defensive feet versus Sloan is really good, because hers is an aggressive feet. And if you can feet and position well, you can almost force a feat from Sloan and then hopefully only get hit by half the shots.
Yeah, exactly. If you can make use of good terrain, like on our table, there was a wall in the center of the table, and that kind of thing helps so much against Sloan, right?
Yeah.
Then, oh, totally, because now it's +4 defense.
Yeah.
Wow, +7, so they go up to 21. It seems okay.
Yeah, not bad. Def 21 is okay.
So let's talk quickly about the finals. You're going into the finals, and you paid like $11 to come from England. Did you expect to get that far?
I didn't know what to expect, because one of the cool things about coming to this event for me was it was full of people who I'd never played against before. I think Tom Guan and Jeremy Lee were the only two people out of 16 that I played against before in various events like WTC, Smogcom. And the rest, I didn't even know half of them, right?
Sure.
I had no expectation for if I would do well or not. And I was really impressed by, kind of unsurprisingly, right? But I was really impressed by how good all the players were.
So you get to the finals, and who are you facing at that final table?
That was Aaron Whale from Australia.
So our great American event has been co-opted by foreigners. Can you believe that, Corey? Oh, damn it.
Well,
Corey can't even get on my side.
I'd like to say that top four players were actually, I believe it was Mr. Dunford, who is, I believe, English, and then an Australian. And then I believe third and fourth were Corey Burns out of Calgary, Alberta, and Dave Beauchamp out of Ontario.
Yeah, we had two Canadians, an Australian, and a Brit.
So all colonial slash Commonwealth countries, except for, of course, are English. So maybe if you didn't rebel, I'm just saying, we'd have let you into the finals.
And this is where I got to plead with Matt Wilson to not allow foreigners into Lock and Load in future years, because this does not bode well for having home field advantage. All right, so tell me about the sad Cricks lists that you had to face come that final round. It was Cricks, so, right?
It was Cricks, yeah. Aaron had played his Ghost Fleet list, which was Denegra 1 Ghost Fleet, pretty typical Ghost Fleet list. If you've played against anyone Ghost Fleet, you know how it works, but it's about 30 or 40 pirates, some great solos, and some light warjacks. And then he paired that with Lich 2 Dark Host, which is the new theme force that became legal at Lock and Load.
Oh, wow.
And made it into the finals both of Iron Gauntlet and of Masters. So it seems to be a pretty good theme force. Certainly really, really cool. And that one is all about Banes. So that list had approximately 20 or 30 Bane Warriors.
I'll edit that out.
Two units. You're right.
Yeah, yeah.
2 units of Bane Cavalry. A heavy warjack, SMR nodes running around, plus things like Tartarus, Dara Wraith, those kind of support solos.
It's all right.
Yeah. So two infantry swarms, but one heavy infantry with cavalry and one light infantry with lots of recursion.
Gotcha.
And pretty different casters backing them up. So it seemed like a good pair.
And you know going into this that you have to play Haley too, right?
Yeah, so it was clear to me, I'm playing Cricks, Haley 2 is where it's at, right? Haley 2 is superb into Cricks, her feet stomps all over them, and she can get a lot of work out of her control. Plus, her spell list gives her options to deal with incorporeal nonsense. Although it's worth mentioning that Aaron is not a fan of the Wraith engine, so he didn't include it in either of his lists, although I'm told it's pretty popular with both. So I didn't have to worry about that as much. But on the other hand, Stryker does not get a lot of mileage out of things like his feet or Arcane Shield because all of the Cricks models hit so hard that his models get hurt anyway. So I knew it was going to be Haley 2, for sure.
Right, and the other issue with Cricks, I think, is they have so many dudes that they can commit to scenario against Stryker. They can just like run forward and they're like, well, you still have to kill us, right? Against Haley, you take that run away. So even though, I guess in Mark 3, Stryker 1 and Haley 2's feet feel very, very similar to me, but in this matchup, that extra 5 or 6 inches of movement feels like a massive deal.
Yes, it definitely is.
Your Haley 2 list had a ton of electro leaps to cause additional damage also.
Yeah, well, actually, that's a good point. My list did have a lot of extra leaps, but I ended up making a new list for that game using the Iron Gauntlet rules. So in the semifinals, which was against Corey Burns from Canada, I used just my Haley 2 list, no changes. But in the finals, once I knew he was playing Lich 2, it was clear he was going to play Dark Host. Because his two lists were so different that there was no way he was going to play Lich 2 Pirates, right? Once he'd picked his caster, he'd picked his list. Sure. And there was nothing he was going to swap between his lists. On range hitting, like the Storm Rider, doesn't do as much work because all the Banes have access to Prowl and Lich can put up Clouds. And Heavies and Colossals are going to trade really poorly with an army of infantry weapon busters with armor debuffs. I ended up crafting a custom Storm Division list.
So what is that list that you crafted?
So it's on the stream. So if anyone's interested to see, I'd say check it out. Off the top of my head, it was something like Reliant and 2 Fireflies and Thorn on Haley. A charger on junior, a free squire as well as free junior, and double max lances plus Lattimore. So it was using some of the jacks from my heavy metal list plus the storm lances from striker's list to make a storm division list with Haley 2.
It seems good.
Yeah, it was okay. The way it played out, those storm lances did almost nothing. Okay. Because the matchup was really strange. Once again, you can see this firsthand on the stream, but we had a very weird table. We were playing Recon, right? Recon is the rectangular single zone scenario where the center of the board is the most important thing. And the table we played on, that 12-inch zone was flanked on either side by a forest that went the entire length of the zone. So there were 12 inches of forest on either side of the zone directly. So that was a lot of line of sight blocking and a lot of rough terrain for a scenario where everyone wants to be in the middle of the table. This was then compounded by Lich 2 Ghost Fleet. And I think this is the main reason that Aaron chose that list was Dark Host. Dark Host, their theme benefit is they can place 2 4-inch AoE cloud effects at the start of the game that last the entire game. So he added those to either forest. And then Lich can create 3-inch diameter clouds. So 2 of those completely covered the recon zone and touched the forest on either side. So between the forests, Lich's clouds, and the free clouds, the middle 16 inches of the table were completely blocked for line of sight the entire game in a scenario where only the center of the table really mattered.
Wow. So did you feel like when you saw the table and you saw the clouds that you were at a major disadvantage?
No, but I kind of regretted my choice to go for storm lances because storm lances don't do well in dense terrain and they really want to be able to pick good targets with line of sight to maximize their charge vectors, you know, to get their assault shots, to get their impact attacks where they need them. Gotcha. So they ended up being a little bit... I didn't have enough space to put them in the middle of the board. And they ended up kind of playing outside the forests and not doing that much over the course of the game. And the things that really performed were my whole battle group because they focused inside the recon zone, flanked on either side by the forests. So line of sight against them is limited. And the way the game played out, they basically forced themselves all the way into the recon zone, cleared out Aaron's objective, and were able to clear the zone 2 turns in a row for Haley to dominate and win on scenario.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was basically Haley's battle group versus all of the Banes and battle group that Aaron could cram in the zone. And Haley being Haley, she's very, very good at clearing zones. The storm lances on either flank were basically just a kind of a distraction. They had a couple of useful e-leaps that definitely helped, but they were not the MVPs of that particular game.
Huh. And it went pretty long, didn't it?
Well, I used a lot of my clock. It's one of those things where, honestly, it didn't go that long. I had a lot I had to think about, but when I scored, I cleared the objective, cleared the zone, scored 3 points, beat it on Aaron. Aaron then had to get as many models as he could in the zone to contest. I was able to clear it again and win. So there were 2 turns of scoring in the game. And it was one of those Haley games where she wins off the back of her feet, you know?
Sure.
Had I not been able to clear the zone, and it was pretty close both times. The first time I cleared it, it came down to a single dice roll. So had I not been able to clear the zone, then things would have really bogged down and the game would have gone on long. And that's exactly what I didn't want to happen. Because although I've not played against Lich 2 very much in Mark 3, I did play the Haley Lich matchup all the time in Mark 2. And what I know from that experience is Haley is great early on. With her feet, she has so much momentum and so much power that she can smash most of Lich's stuff. But as soon as Lich can get back in the game with Parasite and his feet, he can kill almost everything that Haley has. Hmm. So you basically get this big swing where Haley wins the game in the first half and then Lich pulls it all the way back in the second half And I knew that I needed to win that game in the first few turns, because if I didn't, I'd quickly fall behind.
Hmm. That is an interesting perspective. And I do tend to agree that Haley has loads of matchups that she probably wants to win in within probably the first four turns. And then after that, it just all seems to go way downhill.
Yeah. As soon as she, because she's a force multiplier, right? She makes her army better. So as soon as she starts losing her army, she has no force to multiply and things start to get problematic.
Right. And the longer you're on the table, the more opportunities there are for Thorn to die. And if Thorn dies, then Haley is super, super sad.
Yep.
I don't know if there's a 13-point jack in the game that matters more than Thorn with Haley 2.
There definitely isn't. Although one thing I will say is with the advent of the Hurricane, you have a kind of an insurance policy for Thorn.
Sure.
Because often Thorn will die, but you'll still be able to get some key spells out from that secondary Arknode.
Hmm. So you won SmogCon earlier this year, right? Or was that late last year?
Yeah, that was February this year.
February.
So about 5 months ago.
Then you come across the pond and you win Lock and Load with Signar. How are you feeling Signar is as a faction right now?
They're pretty good. I think right now Signar are one of the top dogs. And they're definitely one of the factions to beat. This is something I was discussing with a lot of the European teams. We had the ETC, the European Team Championship, a couple of weeks ago.
Okay.
And this is a big deal because it's kind of a precursor to the WTC, right? And a lot of the European teams will use it to practice their team composition and also their lists. And a common theme was in those five-person team events, you should be expecting that one person will play Ghost Fleet and one person will play Signar, because those two seem to be the top dogs. Now, under that, there's a lot of good stuff and there's a lot of room for innovation, but you definitely want those represented in your team. And I'm of the opinion that Signar and Krix are the strongest factions in the meta. And I think that's borne out, at least in part, by the two finals we had this weekend, which were both Signar versus Krix.
That was actually my next question, was what did you think the strongest factions are? Who are the best three Signar players in the world right now? Who do you follow to get advice on Signar?
So we actually have kind of a Signar chat on Facebook where a lot of us dojo lists and that kind of thing. I speak a lot to the Swedes, the Norwegians, Americans. But in terms of best players, I mean, there's lots of good ones. I'd be hesitant to call out only three.
Okay. You got two big wins this year. Are you the best Signar player in the world?
Well, in terms of results this year, sure. But it's never that simple, right? Like I said, there's loads of good players.
Yes. Just a couple more questions for you. With not counting the potential CID changes, including mercenaries, that might come down the pike in the next couple weeks. Just trencher theme, heavy metal theme, what casters in Signar have gained the most with the trencher theme in particular?
The trencher theme I'm really excited about, because I do think some casters have gained a lot. And I think Signar already is in a good position where it can call upon a lot of strong casters in multiple strong lists. And the trencher theme is just going to add to that. We're going to get to the point where you can play pretty much any caster in Signar in a theme and have it be a really good competitive list, I think. The ones who I think benefit the most from the trencher theme force as it is currently in CID are Haley 3, kind of obviously, and Striker 3. There's a few others, but I think those two can, for the first time, can really make their game plans work inside a theme force. whereas Halley 3 was strong in Storm Division and in Heavy Metal, but one of her best features has always been her Cloud Warp, right? And she couldn't do that in Theme. And sure. Stryker just didn't have the right models to make his kit work in a Theme Force, and trenches are exactly what he wants.
Okay.
So, yeah, so just to elaborate on that, Halley 3, she wants a Cloud Wall, she wants guns behind it to force you to engage, and she wants armor cracking so that when you engage with heavy stuff, it dies.
Do you think like the traditional Halley list is going to stay the same, and you're just going to put in Hammer Dwarves in exchange for Storm Lances? Is that...
You could put in Hammer Dwarves. I personally wouldn't. I really like Trencher Long Gunners. I think they're absolutely excellent and well worth putting in her list. I think the best substitute for Storm Lances is Trench Busters and Maxwell Finn, who have kind of comparable defensive and offensive stats, but have a lot more flexibility because they're single model activations. They benefit from things like Tactician in that Theme Force and Dodge. Dodge from the Patrol Dog on models with Temporal Distortion is pretty ridiculous. And gives them a lot of play into a lot of things that they really shouldn't be able to fight toe to toe.
And I also think that, and while it's a minor change, I think the Grenadier getting Brutal Charge is, it doesn't make the Grenadier awesome or whatever, but in the Trencher Theme Force, when your Grenadier charges in, it's a lost cause anyway. And getting like a last hurrah and a PAL 15 charge is like, okay. It's a lot better than
I agree. I actually really like it in Stryker 3, who's the other guy I said was really good with trenches. Brutal Charge with him is really relevant, right? Because of his feat, where your charge is auto-hit and you get an extra dice.
Oh, sure.
And those things then basically hit like heavies on the charge. That's not his primary game plan. I'm not saying Stryker 3 should run like 10 Grenadiers.
No.
But it's a nice upside where his shooting support models, which are his Grenadiers, also have good synergy with his feet.
Yep.
And the thing that's exciting for Stryker is he can basically play like an infantry spam, right? He can play like 20 commandos, 20 trencher infantry, all with advanced deploy, all with decent speed and good defensive stats against range. And he can just run them up the table, cover all of the scenario zones, and then fury and feet and just kill anything.
That seems good.
Yeah, and it's a very unconventional playstyle for Sigma, right? So I think it will catch a lot of people off guard.
Yeah, I think so as well. I can't wait to see what we get and what people can unlock with. I don't know if the Long Gunners will come back. I don't know if the Commandos will come back. But I think that this CID cycle is going to unlock something unexpected. And I think that that's overall a positive.
I agree.
Corey, do you have any questions?
I had one really simple one. What do you, being the last convention of the last Iron Gauntlet format winner, what are your thoughts on the new setup for Iron Gauntlet?
I think it's a big step in the right direction. I think it was cool that they made an Iron Gauntlet format that had its own unique rule set. But ultimately, now that we've seen how it played out, that turned off a lot of players and made things confusing, right? The fact that I have to explain how the Gauntlet rounds work when we're talking about the final game of Iron Gauntlet ever played, you know, people aren't that interested in it. And I think this new way of doing things will make the World Championship more accessible to more players, easier to understand, and it will mean there'll be a lot more events where people are interested in it. So I think it's a good move.
It also means that we can move up the amount of events people qualify at.
Exactly. So we should have a lot more players, which will be cool.
Good. Any other thoughts on Lock and Load that you wanted to say, Pat?
It was a superb event. I'd recommend it to anybody. This Lock and Load, I think, was especially exciting. We had an incredible keynote. Over the weekend, there were so many spoilers and so many cool new models in terms of things like Grim King, Company of Iron. There was a lot of stuff going on. And if you're on social media, check out the streams. Like, go to Jay's Facebook and see all of the spoilers for all of the different models. But it really reassured me that War Machine has had some growing pains, but now it's in a really good spot. And it looks like the game is going to get better and better over the next year.
Yes. One of the things that I felt was odd was last year there was probably 1,000 people. This year there was 600 and some odd. But I thought the event run by Privateer this year was better. Like, the keynote was better. The side areas and the painting, like, all of that stuff felt better. Like, it was a better event, and it was sort of a shame that it was a fall off from last year in such a substantial amount.
I think Company of Iron is going to fix some of that. I think Company of Iron, I don't know if you guys got a chance to try it over the weekend. I took time on Sunday because I was watching a lot of people play. And Company of Iron Spurs is definitely a more non-competitive game. It's something you can play at home with your friends. It's small. It's a little faster. And the format is not as competitive, but it is still utilizing a lot of the same mechanics.
Yeah.
So it's giving something that newer players can get into the game and learn. It's also giving something that the players who've been around for a while will still have fun and enjoy doing. That doesn't push for just crush your opponent at any cost and bring really bad lists.
Okay. Well,
because that's the biggest problem we have locally in our community is that we have one store. The store is a Games Workshop style store, so it's a comic book store, but its primary miniature market is Games Workshop products. So for us playing War Machine, other than doing slow girl leagues and other than doing like the 25 point battle box games, it's really hard to develop a new community. So we have a lot of older players that are good with the mechanics, good at the game, and not a lot of new blood that picks it up unless they're interested in switching from the other game to ours. So having a small skirmish style game, lets a guy buy one unit of models he thinks is really cool and just play that for a while to ease in, makes it a lot easier to draw in that younger crowd.
Yeah, I agree.
So that makes me more excited for Lachlan. Hopefully the attendance will climb again. Also, the energy of the staff. So I don't know if you guys were there last year. I went last year, and the energy of the staff felt low. And I'm guessing a lot of it has to do with the fatigue from just having been pushed so hard to get Mark III out, get new models ready. They seem tired.
Yeah, Saturday night when they distributed the boxes last year, they all looked beaten. Like, they're handing out these boxes to thousands of people, and they just look like they all want to go home. They were excited for Mark III, but they were not excited for Lock and Load.
Whereas this year, the energy felt completely different, both in the players, because I remember I showed up Friday morning, and I was one of those guys that I'm at the tail end of a year and a half of attending to be relatively competitive, you know, having been in the WTC last year, applying and making the team this year, traveling and playing a lot of conventions. I'm at the edge of burnout. So I get there Friday morning. It had been a long week. I hadn't slept since probably Wednesday. I'm exhausted. I'm tired. I get there, I put my head down on the table like I'm getting ready to fall asleep. And the keynote starts. And when the keynote ended, I was probably more energized for this game than I've ever been before. And I didn't realize it until Saturday. When I woke up Saturday, I'm like, I'm actually having a lot of fun. And then it really hit me Sunday, because at every other walk-in I've gone to, which is every once a far, I don't think I've played a game on the Sunday, unless it was in the Masters Finals. So normally by the Sunday, I'm packing my stuff up and getting ready to go. And unless a friend comes up and says, do you want to play me before you leave? I typically don't play. Whereas this one, I was looking for games on the Sunday.
Yeah.
So the energy was just a lot better by the Sunday. Whereas, again, I think a lot of it just goes to a really, really well-done keynote. And again, the staff feeling energy again, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Pat, I want to thank you for joining us. Is there anything you want to say before we skedaddle here?
Thank you for having me. It's always cool to come on the show and talk about Cigna. I just wanted to reiterate that I think Cigna right now is awesome. It's in a fantastic place in terms of its competitive ability, but also in terms of the huge amount of variety of great stuff you can play in the faction. There's really something for everyone. So I guess I'm just saying it's a good time to be a Signal player, and I'd encourage your listeners to make the most of it.
Thank you. All right, Corey.
Yeah, thanks again. It was good to meet you this weekend, Patrick.
Yeah, great to meet you too, Corey.
It's probably my funniest story of the entire weekend. I don't know if I don't think I told you yet, Tim. So Patrick and I played round four of the Masters.
Okay.
And we were sort of talking before the game, and Patrick had been on the show while I was on the show. So we've actually already met, but neither of us knew we'd already met. Okay. So Patrick looks at me after a little bit and goes, "Oh, wait, you're Corey from Canada." And then it was when it clued into me that I'd been on the show when he was on the show, because someone had asked me and I said, "No, I do Storm Chamber." So it was actually quite funny to realize that we talked, but we'd never actually met. And then we actually, I thought it was quite humorous to forget that, yeah, you know, I talked to Patrick already and then just have forgotten.
Yeah. I had no idea.
So that was my favorite moment of the weekend. There's no idea at all. I'm like, hey, no, Pat, we did talk.
Pat, you kicked his ass, right? Pat?
You can tell the truth, Pat. You can tell the truth.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
No.
With that said,
that's,
we're going to sign off.
That's not true, but if Corey will let me tell it my way, then I will.
You can tell it however you want. I got into this game a long, long, well, not War Machine, but tabletop games a long time ago, and I learned a very valuable lesson from my wife about 15 years ago. Actually, it'd be 9 years ago now. And it was I learned how to lose with dignity and grace. and not to take games so seriously, because I might not have been the nicest guy to beat years ago, and I try to make it so the guys that play me now don't mind whether they win or lose against me.
That's awesome. Very important skill in War Machine, I think.
All right, gentlemen.
The only way to get new players up.
I'm going to sign us off there. Until next time, thanks for listening.